Good evening. Thursday, November 1st, 2016, Bucksport Planning Board meeting. Call to order.
Mary Jane Bush.
Present.
Brett McDonald.
Yep.
David Grant.
Present.
Steve Fite.
Here.
Christopher Johnson.
Here.
George Hanson is not here. Edward Belcher.
Here.
Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes of October 4th, 2016 minutes?
Yep.
Make a motion to accept as written.
Second.
Any discussion? Omissions? All in favor?
Extension.
Chair has no report. Code enforcement officers report.
A few things to report to the planning board. The Board of Appeals met on October 11th to consider a variance request for a reduction in a sideline setback. The board granted the variance. It's been recorded, and I've actually received a copy of the recorded variance certificate, so that's been all taken care of. The next step will be for the property owner to apply for building permits, which he plans to do as soon as he sells the house he's living in now.
Which property was that? I missed that.
It's out on Bucks Mills Road in the Kings Mountain subdivision. This fellow bought two side-by-side lots,
And
he wanted to build his house in a location that was too close to the shared common boundary line between the two lots.
Of his own property.
So he had to get a set. You can't ignore that line because there's a subdivision lot, not just any lots. So it makes a difference. So
he doesn't have to come back to us, though?
No, he won't. No. He never came to you in the first place.
There you go.
There's been an ad put out for a developer for Wilson Hall. I've not received any replies yet, but we're still taking whatever opportunity I can find to send the ads out to anybody who might be interested or know somebody who might be interested in taking a look at Wilson Hall.
This board could do it. We can come in and do it.
Pool our resources.
Pool our resources.
The whole rig.
That's right.
Let's go. Crowdfunding.
I met with AIM representative Jeff McGlynn and his attorney and a surveyor from Fliscan Day today. They're proposing to split off a portion of their lot that contains the generating facility. They want to have a separate lot for that purpose under the owner of the facility, which is Bucksport Generation LLC. The remaining of the parcel is owned by Bucksport Mills LLC. There was one issue that came up in discussing the proposed split, and that is the I'll show you. I have it with me. This area here is the proposed new lot here. This is River Road, and the entrance to the mill is right here. So this area here, part of it's in shoreline zone, which is represented by this line right here. And the issue that I identified was that we have a lot coverage limit in shoreline zoning of 80%. And this is all impervious surfaces, buildings or pavement or concrete. So that's an issue they have to find a solution for. And they're going to figure out the best way to do that. A variance.
It's an industrial site.
A variance is one option for them. But because it's a new lot, Ed, they have to comply with the applicable dimensional standards. They have anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's industry or not. You have to comply with whatever standards apply. Setback is another requirement that would need to be met because this is a brand new property line. Any buildings close to it have to meet the setback,
right.
Which is 10 feet. Fortunately, they all do. They laid it out so that all the buildings would be.
Is that Bucksport's standards?
Yes.
Yeah.
This building here is the red marks buildings to be removed, so the encroachment over the line here is not really relevant since that building's going to be demolished anyway, as is this one down here. So that's.
We're going to leave that carpenter shop.
This one here?
That one's carpenter shop.
Yep.
I think they put water into it just recently.
Who's going to own that wharf out there?
On the left side.
That's still on Bucksport Mills LLC property. So we met today to talk about that.
There's not much parking area on that particular site. I mean, drive. I don't know. According to those lines, I don't even know if you can drive around those buildings.
Well, yes, this blue line marks the travel path, by the way. So, yeah, you can drive around those buildings.
Okay.
They used to have tractor trailers going there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Down to the warehouse and then the train sheds behind it.
The Comprehensive Plan Committee met last month. Work is continuing on finalizing the content of the plan. We're still working on the future land use content. No public hearings have been scheduled yet, but we're getting closer. The light is seen at the end of the tunnel on that. The ordinance that you'll be holding a public hearing on tonight, I inadvertently told the town council at their last meeting that you'd already held the public hearing, because I was talking to them about scheduling their own public hearing. So I was thinking, I know you talked about the ordinance at the last meeting. For some reason, I had it in my mind that that was the public hearing, but in fact, tonight's the public hearing. So, but you will see an ad in this week's paper for the town council's public hearing on the same ordinance, which they'll hold on the 10th.
Remember at the meeting the other night, I asked you about that. You said it had already gone by, and I thought, oh, man, I can't.
I did.
At the comprehensive plan meeting. When I asked
Even then, I was mistaken, too.
Right. I thought, how did I miss this? But anyways, I'm glad you pointed that out. Thank you.
Chapter 6, the business licensing ordinance, the ordinance committee is currently starting a review of a complete overhaul of that chapter, which contains business licensing and permit requirements for municipal permits and state permits. There'll be some significant changes made. There'll be some types of licenses that will no longer be required, and there'll be one new license that the state says we should be enforcing, and that's innkeepers. Innkeepers are subject to licensing by municipalities according to state law. There'll be three businesses in town that'll be affected by that. The Fort Knox Inn, Bucksport Motor Inn, and Spring Fountain Motel will have to be licensed now. It's an annual license. The proposed draft of Chapter 6 waives the application fee for the first year for these businesses.
Mm-hmm. Any B&Bs?
We don't have any B&Bs, I know of anyway. and there'll be some other licenses like taxi cabs are proposed for removal.
Are the vendors who come in under this too?
Vendors will still be subject to licensing. Bowling alleys, pinball machines, bagatelles, those are all subject to licensing now, but we're taking those out. There's just one business that has a pinball license, it's Ramona's, and they have another one too, I can't recall what it is now, but anyway, those will be taken out. Food licenses will be, again, if all goes as planned, will be treated differently than they are now. Businesses that sell food on a retail basis right now are supposed to be licensed and are licensed by the town. That includes like Hannaford's, Big Mac's Convenience Store, Tozier's, and Ledbetter Superstop would also be subject to that license. But we're proposing that these types of businesses not be licensed. Essentially, only the businesses that sell food for on-premise consumption, they have dining facilities, in other words, those types of businesses will still be subject to licensing, but not others. Also, businesses that manufacture food will not be subject to licensing. We have one that is right now, and that's Waterworld 2. They process shrimp. It's a food manufacturing business. They need a license right now, but under the proposed ordinance, they wouldn't. Home-based businesses that manufacture food products are subject to licensing, but under the proposed draft, they wouldn't be subject to licenses. So,
do businesses such as Hannaford and others like it get licensed by the state to sell food?
Yes, yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why would you license premises that have food consumption? What's the reasoning behind that as opposed to the others?
My initial proposal, actually, to the ordinance committee was to not license any food business because we do not have any food standards that we enforce.
That's what I was thinking.
The state does that.
Hmm.
But they felt they still wanted to have a food license in place, so that's why I'm proposing that we only enforce those businesses that have on-premise consumption because, not because of the food issue, but because it's a place of assembly and you have life safety concerns where people assemble. I mean, certainly they have proper egress, emergency lights, and things of that nature. So that's what we've always been looking at that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We don't look at how they store their food or how they cook their food or how they serve their food because we have no standards to enforce. I was just going to say that ordinance, by the way, is on our website. If you want to go take a look at it, it's on the homepage. There's a link to it on the homepage of our website. Yes, Dave.
The new proposed Leadbetter, is that going to have a? There's not going to be any restaurant. They're not going like the one up in on the out at the end of 395. That has you can sit down and eat. And,
I don't think so, Dave.
I don't they have a kitchen facility, but they never mentioned a sit-down.
The back of that life safety code, so still, with Hannaford or any of those others, the fire chief could go in and do an inspection on those, is that correct?
As a matter of fact, yes. I've added in one provision, and that is that any facility that's using cooking appliances subject to inspection by the fire department at their discretion.
It's the same set of life safety codes, too. I mean, I understand everything that's been said. I'm just trying to understand what differentiates. I mean, he theoretically could go into those other places where there's an assembly of people eating or dining and do the same life safety codes, whether they're licensed or not. I don't really care one way or the other, to be honest with you. Whatever they decide to do is fine. I'm just trying to understand the reasoning behind it.
Well, I think it's important to be fair, but if you think about it, if we justify the licensing requirement for business because they're a place of assembly, there are other types of businesses or facilities that are places of assembly that don't have license requirements. We don't inspect.
Bookstore, et cetera.
Well, I'm thinking of a movie theater, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Churches.
Or any school, for example. Or churches.
Right.
Range halls. None of those are inspected.
You're right. And that's what I'm trying to understand the difference there between like a Hannaford and a McLeod's as it relates to. If it's just based upon life safety standards or the life safety code, it still applies to Hannaford, whether they're licensed or not.
Right, of course, yeah.
So if the only reason we're doing that is because of that, then it almost makes me wonder why we're bothering to ask those folks to get a license.
Hannaford had a recent upgrade about a year and a half ago.
Well, they still need to be inspected or licensed.
Right.
So
right.
I just don't see the difference between them and another.
When I saw
it's
the
just
plans,
life safety codes.
When I see the plans, usually the second page of the plan is the layout of the life safety codes. They're right in the plans now on all these buildings.
Yep.
So.
Thank you.
Yep. Next, Great Pond Mountain Trust has already submitted an application for your review. It didn't get in time for this agenda, so they'll be coming to the next month's meeting. They are building a recreational trail on Upper Long Pond Road. It's classified in our ordinance as an outdoor recreational facility that requires planning board approval. So they'll be coming to see you next month.
Where in Bucksport?
Upper Long Pond Road. They acquired a parcel up there. It's about 5 acres, I think. And they've already started building a trail.
I think it's done, actually.
Well, it might be. But there's, you have to talk about things like parking and those sorts of things that need to be looked at by the planning board.
Okay.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Item 5, limited public forum. An opportunity for the public to address the board on matters related to land use or planning in the town of Bucksport, but not related to any business before the board tonight. Okay. Board of the limited public forum closed. Unethical. No unfinished business, no new business, administrative business. A, public hearing for proposed amendments to the Bucksport Town Code, Appendix K, land use ordinance. For the purpose of changing parking requirements in section 13.15.87, change of use review standards in section 10 and two definitions in section 20. Open that up.
Just give a brief summary of the proposed changes, just refresh your memory in case you've forgotten since last month. The changes, one change was proposed by the town council, and the other changes were proposed by the ordinance committee. The first change, which is the one proposed by the town council, affects section 13.15.87. And what that change does, it applies public parking on Main Street to satisfy the parking requirements for any use on Main Street. Any commercial or non-commercial use, I should say.
Within what bounds?
On Main Street.
From the mill to treatment plant or?
On Main Street. Whatever, you know, the Main Street, you know, Main Street as defined. That's from the bridge to essentially the mill. Main Street ends at the intersection of Bagley.
Okay.
Where there are parking places.
Yeah. So if a property on Main Street has off-street parking now, then that will still be used for off-street parking. And any on-street parking would satisfy any parking, off-street parking that can't be met on that lot. The issue was that the language as it exists now only pertains to existing buildings, not new buildings. And we had a gentleman who wanted to tear down a building on Main Street and build a new one, but his plans would not provide enough off-street parking to meet the needs of that building. So this change would then allow that scenario to happen because only on-street parking would count.
So I guess I'm trying to understand this. How does that solve the problem for a proposal that would require more parking than exists?
Well, we talked about this a little bit at the last meeting. That's the gamble that you take when you have a provision like this. It says, whatever parking needs your use has, our existing public parking satisfies that requirement. Whether it be one car or 100 cars.
To a certain point, and then at that point we have to decide.
It's across that bridge when we get to it.
You'll have to decide, I guess, is it reasonable to say, for example, a call center, I used that example before, that has 50 employees, so you need 50 parking spaces. Is it reasonable to say, yeah, we have 50 parking spaces along Main Street? If you count them up and down Main Street, we have 50 somewhere on Main Street. Is it reasonable to say that satisfies the requirements for that particular business? That will be your judgment call. Because you can also say, in addition to that, we think you should also provide off-street parking someplace else and maybe transport your employees in by bus or whatever. Those are the sorts of things you can look at. If you think that applying this standard, public parking, is going to create a burden to the parking that we have on Main Street, then I think you can ask for additional parking elsewhere. But that's a judgment call you have to make as to what is a burden, what constitutes a burden.
And the other part of it is, if something like that should come into town, we don't want them to go away.
My suggestion was...
It would all depend on location.
And that was the point I made the last meeting, is that maybe we should talk about not allowing businesses that have high parking needs to occupy a building on a property on Main Street. Because parking is a problem. Not a problem, but there, you know, there are limits to parking on Main Street.
We're also looking for...
We're looking for more businesses, though, aren't we?
Right. But there are other types of businesses than those that are places of assembly or, you know, have a lot of employees that are better located elsewhere, where you have more land area to provide adequate off-street parking and also reduce traffic congestion issues. But right now, our ordinance is pretty liberal in what uses are allowed on Main Street. We haven't had a proposed use that's presented a conflict, but it could happen.
Who bought the energy building, Bucksport Energy?
Nichols Plumbing.
Dentist office is there, and what else is there?
He's renting office space.
The dentist office.
Takes up the first floor.
Yeah.
So he's making a lot of nice improvements to that building. He's also addressing an overboard discharge, too, that was discovered on that property.
That was awful. Yeah. How's he going to do it?
What do you mean?
The sewer is dumping into the river there from that building. We've talked about that.
There was your swimming hole, wasn't it, Dad?
What?
I'm just kidding.
Was that your swimming hole when you were a little kid?
No. Do you know what year that was built? Was that built after the main line sewer went from the mill?
I don't recall it. That was part of the lumber yard.
Longview lumber.
Longview. So it's been there a long time.
That building was there in the mid-60s, I know that.
The sign shop, Kim Delbridge, his building was not hooked up to the new sewer.
Right, yeah. He told me about that. It is now.
I know. So I went down and I got my ties to that, and I don't know where it had been dumping the last number of years.
But for some reason...
But I would say the same thing about that building, too.
It may not be the only overboard discharge left stumping in the river.
That's surprising.
So his solution is to put a septic tank and a lift station down behind there in the parking lot.
Correct.
And drain the waste from the building to that and pump it up to the street. And because he has a warehouse down behind there, if he wants to put plumbing in there, he can drain that to that tank.
He can drain that to the same pump station.
Right.
Where's he going to go from the pump station up to the...
Up to the main and on Main Street.
But where? Which
side? Water fountain.
But how is he going to get it from the pump station up to the street?
They
have to put a pipe in.
Yeah, they dig a trench.
Which way? Across his property?
Yeah. As you're looking at the building from the street, it'd be to the left.
Yeah, okay.
That's where it'll come up through there.
Oh, between?
Between the warehouse and the main building.
Yeah. Okay. Now, a discharge line, a little force main for that wouldn't have to be more than a 2-inch pipe, pressure pipe. Mm-hmm. Really.
So I've issued a permit for that. I'm not sure if he started doing that work yet. I've got to check with him.
Okay, because that's got a lower flow level.
Yeah.
Just like Kim's built.
Right.
Kim pumps the lower level up. We could go down to the sewer department and find out if the upper floors are actually connected out to the sewers. You can bring it in that way.
In that building? No, there's nothing in that building that's connected to the sewer. It's all draining to the river.
I'm thinking there may be a T left of that building.
That's why all those seatbelts are.
When it went through.
There could be,
yeah.
So that's the first change. The second change essentially brings more flexibility to the review of changes of a use. whether it be an expansion.
Where are we? Which page are we on?
Well, it starts on page one.
Okay.
No, excuse me. Page three is the second group of changes. And this came about because it was discovered that there were occasions where you had a business that moved out of a storefront on Main Street and another one with very similar characteristics moved in that required a permit because it was a change of use. The proposed changes in this section will allow the code enforcement officer some flexibility in determining, first of all, what type of permit might be needed, or if a permit is needed at all when one use moves in, one use moves out, and another one moves into the same space. And that's based on a review of section 10.6, which lists several different types of detrimental effects that would be considered when a proposed change came into the town office. Right now there are thresholds. There are thresholds, like if it's, let's see if I can show you an example. So an expansion, for example, starts out by saying currently that an expansion of a structure is subject to level one review unless it's in any shoreline zone or it's more than 2,500 square feet. Those thresholds have been taken out, and now it's just simply if a determination is made by the code officer that the expansion has some detrimental effect that justifies taking it to the planning board.
So that would be
so the, I just want to clarify something. So are the only changes are underlined?
Bottom of page five.
This is a repeal and replacement proposal, Mary Jane. There's no underlining or line throughs of text. It's all, what you have there, I think, what you should have, is a comparison between what's proposed and what's existing.
Well, maybe I don't have the right copy, but I thought I brought this from the other meeting.
Can you tell me what it says on the first page, Mary Jane?
Proposed amendment to Appendix K, Land Use Section 13.15.8.7.
Right, I think you have the right document.
Yeah, there are alternate pages, proposed bit revisions on one and then existings on the other.
And then on page 8, that's the reason why I'm asking.
You're on page 8?
Well, there's underlining and...
Oh, yes. Page 8, my copy, anyway.
Right.
Underlining.
Okay.
There is on the very last page, Mary Jane, there is some text that is being added that's underlined because the entire section isn't being replaced. Just this is one addition being made.
All right.
This is my last page.
Well, we don't have the same documents. We don't have.
The last page you have is like this, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is my last page.
Well, it is different.
I don't know where you got that from.
Let's see the last
thing I've got. But I've also got that copy.
Oh, that might have been the first draft that...
But this section 10 is the same, pretty much, right?
We can keep it. We'll just share this one.
Right.
Okay.
So where are we right now?
I was talking about the changes to section 10.8 on page 5.
Page 5 of section 10.
And 8, 9. 10, 5.
Section 10.8, page 5.
Definition changed.
I have a note here that I believe when we looked at this last month, you wanted me to add, I think it's the board, the planning board, that wanted me to add to section 10.8.2, any expansion of a structure for the purpose of adding three or more dwelling units in a five-year period is what you wanted me to add.
I don't have that.
I don't have that either.
You don't.
I know we talked about something about that with as it relates to subdivision at the same time. I know we did bring it up. I don't remember specifically. I'd have to go to the tape.
Well, I have it written down here as a change for the final draft, which makes sense, really. So,
it's fine with me.
And then under the definition of expansion of a structure, somebody, I thought it was this board, wanted to add the word or between greenhouses and a vertical.
Or a vertical.
Okay. You recall that one, Steve?
No, I think it was Mary Jane one.
Yeah, we did discuss that.
I'm sorry, but I haven't done that for your review tonight, but I have noted here that those changes will be made. I think that was the only two changes you wanted in the entire draft. So page 6 is just the existing provisions. You also note, too, that the language has been reduced quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah. On page 7, 10.9 deals with renovations or rehabilitations. And again, it's just simplified without making significant changes to the requirements. So 10.91, for example, starts off with the same premise that if you're proposing a minor or major rehabilitation, the code officer will determine what level of review that needs. And that theme goes on page 8 for relocations of a structure. When it refers to section 10.5, that's the section that deals with detrimental impacts. It tells you what detrimental impact might apply. And the basic requirement of level 2 review is if it's in a resource protection district, just about anything is going to have to go to the planning board. And if you're dealing with nonconformities, that's going to go to the planning board in many cases.
So in the fact that we're dropping this part, and the code enforcement officer determined that the relocation poses a risk of causing a significant detrimental effect on the environment and abutting properties. That's out.
That language actually is replaced by the language that says that is subject to review as determined in accordance with the requirements of section 10.5.
Which is a listing of all the...
And that goes back where it says the code officer is the one that makes that review.
You become more of a filter.
That's one way to look at it.
That's one way to look at it. It's also, he determines a lot more now. The code enforcement officer has a lot more.
There's more responsibility now on the code officer to make the right call about the type of review that's needed. And in some cases, that won't be any review. If it's a very minor change,
true.
The answer will be you don't need a permit or a land use permit. You might need a building permit statement, not land use.
So it won't be a more friendly, business friendly.
Well, that's the goal. That's the goal. Yeah.
Look in that direction.
And essentially, it'll make things like, for example, if you have a retail business, a gift shop, say that is on Main Street, and they move out, and another business moves in, and also sells things, but maybe not gifts, so something different. That will be a type of change that won't require. Probably won't require review. I guess it depends on what they're selling.
Depends on how the vote comes out Tuesday.
Yeah.
Medicinal marijuana.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, page 10, the change of use of a structure or property, that's also, again, based on section 10.5 as to what sort of review it might need. Except for if you're changing a non-conforming use to another non-conforming use, that goes to the planning board. And the last page, page 11, deals with non-conforming uses. The last section was added in there to reflect the requirement for DEP shoreline guidelines. They have this language. That this language comes exactly from the shoreline guidelines.
Yeah, the same thing.
Yeah, okay. I know.
And that, again, just deals with non-conforming uses. So that's it in a nutshell. This has been on the town's website for a while. I haven't had any members of the public come in to see me or question me about the changes.
I assumed that was what the guy was here for. He was going to say something about it. The excitement.
The ordinance committee has looked at the changes we just talked about, and these are the ones that they are forwarding on to you for your review and recommendation to the town council.
Thank you. Hearing all of that, do I hear a motion that we now send this on to the town council?
Before you do that, you want to hold your public hearing just to get that out of the way.
Very small. The very small.
Point is moved.
Steve.
Just for the record, that was just open and close it.
Okay. Put up the detour sign.